I do think that's pretty cool. You don't think that's cool?
No, it is. It is pretty righteous.
It is pretty righteous, really? What are we, like, are we in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Party on, dude. Party on. It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In episode 186, I interview Spencer Linton of BYU Sports Nation. We talk about some of the offseason storylines, conference expansion, and Tyler Haws' snub with the NBA Combine. Matt and I then talk about baseball, Taysom Hill as a Heisman candidate, BYU as a top 25 football team, and then we draft the best quarterbacks in BYU history. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Find us on iTunes and listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, a man who I believe is worthy to hold the hammer of Thor, Spencer Linton of BYU TV. Spencer, welcome back to the podcast.
Great to be back, and that's a lofty designation. So I appreciate the Avengers shout out.
Yes.
And I think Jerem Jordan may have some serious disputations with that.
Oh, absolutely. That was my entire purpose of saying it, actually, was to irk Jerem. Have you seen the movie yet?
I have not seen the movie yet. Unfortunately, I have a 3-year-old, and initial plans were to see it, but they kind of got nixed by parenthood. So
yes.
Hopefully we get out to see it this weekend.
I've been there, but Matt's, I think, in your same boat, so I can't give you too hard of a time. Plus, not all of us are massive geeks like Jerem and I, so some people actually, you know, care about other things. Well, let's dive into some BYU sports topics, Spencer. So one of the things that in the off season that everyone talks about once spring football's done, no matter whether there's news or not, is independence and conference expansion and all those type of things. The news so far this off season have been Big 12 might not have to have a championship go to 12 teams for a championship game, as well as, you know, some news sources here and there saying that conference expansion may or may not be close. Has anything really changed since the end of the football season where you think things are closer or farther away from BYU joining a conference? Or is this just where you just fill up the air in the offseason because there's not games to talk about?
That's a fair question. And I think the media does a pretty good job of, you know, taking an inch and turning it into a mile,
especially
during the off season. And so, you know, you qualify for that. We qualify for that on BYU Sports Nation. But in terms of like serious movement for BYU towards the conference, I don't know that there has been movement really in any direction. I know there's been some clamoring that the Mountain West and BYU need each other and Boise State needs a rival. And, you know, people are looking for things to talk about. I can tell you this much from my interactions with Tom Homo, the athletic director, and from football personnel, BYU is happy with where they are, especially given what's approaching on the 2015 schedule. You know, it's a schedule that the nation will respect. They'll be featured on national television, the majority of those games outside of a couple of CBS Sports Network games, which technically are national television. They're just limited because not as many TV homes have them, but they're excited about where they are. And so get the impression from Thomas, just like, look, wait, step back and appreciate what lies ahead of us in independence. I think the key, and we've referenced this a couple of times on BYU Sports Nation after conversations we've had with Brett McMurphy of ESPN. And that is that for BYU to really pick up some momentum from joining a conference, it's not so much with the Big 12 and Bob Bowles being their conference commissioner and what they're doing. It lies within the TV rights that the Big 10 have coming up and how they renew that and if they decide to go to 16 teams and become the first super conference. And so if they hit that button and decide to become the first Power 5 conference that goes to 16 teams, then there will be some commotion that the other Power 5 conferences are like, oh, okay, well, we should probably make some moves. So the SEC wants to go from 14 to 16, and then the Pac-12 is like, well, we don't want to get left behind, so let's create two divisions and have eight teams in each and go to 16 as well. at that point, I don't see any way BYU does not get invited into one of what we're projecting would be four mega super conferences, whatever they're going to be called. And so I think it starts there. Right now, BYU's, they're cool with where they are. They just are trying to win games, get noticed, and they've got the schedule to do that. And that was a forever long answer. So,
well,
I apologize, but
technically it was only about 2 minutes and 40 seconds, Spencer.
Okay.
So not you're not even close to the longest answer I've gotten on this podcast. That goes to Greg Rebell, by the way.
Okay.
No, Franchuk may have the longest, actually, now that I say that. But, you know, you make the good point about the TV contracts, which I think is a lot of times overlooked in these discussions. It becomes, you know, the conferences don't have a lot of reason today to expand or move because the contracts are locked into place for a few more years. I wanted to get your perspective on, you had Tom Homo about, well, I guess it was a week and a half ago, to talk about and reveal the official 2015 schedule with some of the start times and such. And you talked about how tough that thing was and this schedule coming up. And Matt and I basically rehashed your interview, so I'm not going to do that. But I look at 2016, Spencer,
mm-hmm.
at Arizona, at Utah, UCLA at home, and West Virginia in Maryland. Maybe it doesn't have the cachet of the first four games of the 2015 season, but I look at that, projecting a little bit some of those teams, that could be as difficult as this four games to start 2015. Am I crazy, or do you think that 2016 start of the season, and then, of course, I haven't even gotten to the fact that we'll, 2 weeks after West Virginia, be in East Lansing playing Michigan State, is this just possibly as crazy a schedule in 2016 as 2015 is?
Yeah, I think you're right on point with that. Just an initial knee-jerk reaction, because you have to consider the BYU is going to be playing for the brand new quarterback.
Yeah.
And so if they had Taysom Hill next year for those first four, you could say, well, I think 2015 September was just a little bit tougher. But the fact that he's leaving and BYU brings back either Tanner Mangum or Bo Hodge, or somebody else that we might not know about. I'm guessing it's going to be Mangum at this point. But the fact that they have a brand new signal caller going in with that schedule, I think the degree of difficulty when you consider that specific paradigm, the 2016 opening is ridiculous. And top to bottom, I think next year's schedule is harder than 2015. It's loaded.
Yeah. It is absolutely loaded. And like you said, it'll be a whole different deal. Your conversation on BYU Sports Nation with Tom Homo was great about the scheduling. What, you know, as you've had a chance to interact with them, you got a lot of it out on that episode of your show, but I'm just curious, like, do you get the impression that he is frustrated with fans about some of the criticism of the schedules or bad home November games and those kind of things? He didn't come across as defensive to me on your show, but occasionally on Twitter he comes off as maybe a little bit annoyed at all the hard work he does to put together a schedule, and then people seem to be looking at the downside of it as opposed to, wow, we are playing all of these great teams in these great venues.
I'll say this about Tom. He does a really good job handling any flack he receives on Twitter. And the fact that he's active with the fans and responds to some of them, and he gets emails and who knows how many phone calls and how many people coming up to him as he travels the country to watch different Cougar teams. He does a really good job handling the stress and demand that job requires. Let's be honest. I mean, the BYU athletic director is probably one of the most highly scrutinized positions, just because fans don't really have much else in the world to distract them,
right,
in terms of partying and whatnot. And I say that tongue in cheek, but kind of seriously as well. Like, BYU is their passion, is their outlet. And so Tom Homo is an easy target if they disagree with something. He does a really good job handling that. Of course, there are going to be some annoyances and some frustrations, but we've asked him straight up, you know, like, man, it must be, you know, crazy dealing with all these these fans sending emails and stuff like that. How do you handle it all? And he's been pretty low key about it. So you know what? For the most part, it's all positive. And we get some, you know, vocal people now and again, but for the most part, it's positive. And so I was surprised to hear that, and almost glad for his sake that was the case. But you know, I can't scream it loud enough. If there's somebody out there that is criticizing what he's doing, or you know, feeling like they could do a better job than him, just stop. Just stop right there, because he is one of a kind, and his connections and his ability to defend and barter for BYU and be in big time social circles on the college football scene, it's really unprecedented. Just because of his background and his Super Bowl rings, like, he's a very well connected person. And so, you know, we're privy to information and things that come out and hear things about Tom. I can't share everything, but I can tell you this much. Nobody works harder than him, and nobody has a better idea of where he wants BYU to be, and that is eventually in a Power 5 conference, than Tom Homo. So I'm one of his biggest fans, because behind the lines, I'm starting to see what it is he actually does and how he succeeds.
Yeah, it's putting together the football schedule right now has got to be, that could be a full-time job, let alone all the other things, of course, that he has to deal with. Now, one of the things that's come out in the off season is the athletes are going to get this stipend of $4,500. Other schools are also out with what they're going to do on this as well. BYU's number happens to be a little bit higher than some of the Power 5 schools, and including a certain school up north. So as you look at that kind of information, do you think it's going to make much of a difference in recruiting, or is this more of a, you know, if a recruit's, it tips the edge on somebody that's really straddling the fence, but it's not going to be a driver of people making decisions?
We've already seen it make a difference for BYU baseball in landing Kyle Dean, who is an Under Armour All-American and a Perfect Game All-American, a kid that is a projected first or second round pick in this year's Major League Baseball draft coming out of high school. Now, unless it's a top 15, top 20 pick overall, he's probably going to come to BYU for 3 years. And Mike Little, the baseball coach, said offering him a Hardy scholarship played a huge role in that. And so we've seen it affect at least one major player there. And I don't know how much it's going to necessarily take BYU to the next level in recruiting, but it certainly can't hurt. And you said that they have more, they're offering more money than some of the other Power 5 programs. They're offering more money with this proposed $4,500 stipend than 55 other Power 5 programs. There are only 10 P5 schools that are offering more than BYU, and most of them are in the SEC, and that's no surprise. So I'm excited to see, because this is something that they can control, and this is a way they can compete off the field. And they've raised the bar and gone against, you know, what BYU usually does, which is kind of feel out the situation, look at what everybody else is doing, and then they kind of ease into something. They got to the front of the line in a hurry with this thing and said, we're going to compete, and we want to get the best. And credit to Bronco Mendenhall and Tom Homo and Dave Rose and Mike Little and all the coaches in the athletic department for doing that. Hard to tell just how much of a difference it will make in securing some of these athletes, but we do have one on record, a big-time baseball guy that's, you know, looks like he's going to come to BYU because, at least in part, of that stipend.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one example, at least, and probably more to come as the recruiting becomes news on the recruiting trail. Switching away from football to basketball for a minute. So the news for BYU basketball, of course, is quiet as well. But Tyler Hawes does not get invited to the NBA version of the combine, which. You know, I don't know that it's as big of a deal as people are making it out to be, because it's not quite the same. But is this a matter of his game not projecting? And the second part of my question is, you know, he's the type that that strikes me is if you doubt him, he's just going to work that much harder. Do you think this provides motivation for a guy like Tyler Hawes, or do you think he probably already has all the motivation he needs?
Knowing Tyler, I think this gives him another edge. He's already motivated, and he's had the hard work ethic instilled in him basically from the womb, just because that's how he is. And so whether or not you doubt him, he's going to continue to work hard. You can tell him he's the greatest player in the world, and he's the person that will say, well, I don't feel like I deserve that, so I'm going to work harder so that I do deserve that. And you can say, well, he doesn't belong in the combine. He's going to look at that and say, well, I'm going to take that and say, I do belong there, and so it's going to fuel my motivation. He will spin whatever you say to just churn in his own mind that he wants to be a better player. And that's a unique attribute for a guy that's the all-time leading scorer in BYU history, averaged 22 points a game last year, and he just was very nonchalant. I'm not surprised that he didn't get a combine invite because, you know, he's not a five-star guy that went to Duke or went to North Carolina or Kentucky or Ohio State or Michigan State. BYU is kind of off the radar, and aside from Jimmer, there haven't been a ton of guys that have created a ton of national buzz that would get invited to the combine. I mean, I don't even know if Kyle Collinsworth is going to get invited next year. He's a projected late second-round pick. Dude sets the NCAA triple-double record for most of the season, and he's barely making second-round projection lists. Some guys have him not getting drafted. So I think Tyler's in the same position. But I stand by the fact that everybody can use a score. And I know that we say, well, what about Jimmer? Jimmer is a totally different player than Tyler Hawes. Jimmer needs the ball in his hands to be effective. And he's not as an athletic defender as Tyler. And Tyler's not, right now, not much of a better defender than Jimmer, but he's a little bit better there. And Tyler can work off the screen and has been working a ton on his three-point shot. He's essentially trying to make it in the NBA as a Steve Novak or as a J.J. Redick. And I feel like, why not? Why couldn't he do it? He's done everything else people said he couldn't do, so why not that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Jimmer comparisons aren't particularly helpful just because they're not – they don't really have much in common besides the fact that they filled the bucket up. Their offensive games were so different. One last basketball question as I get you out of here. I've asked several guests this question, but I'd love to hear your perspective on it. Going into the next basketball season, there's, you know, some stability with, of course, the Kyle Collinsworth, the human triple-double coming back. But there'll be a lot of new players out of high school, off of missions. Is this something that you think this could be a under-the-radar special season with that mix of experience and youth? Or do you think this team is probably a year away or two from hitting what could be, based on the recruiting classes that have come in, some pretty special teams?
Jeremy and I have mapped out the specific rosters for the next couple of years. In fact, it's on our whiteboard in our office at BYU Broadcasting. And it's funny that you say under the radar, because I've already read a couple of projections. You know, they're way too early. But BYU is going to miss Tyler, no doubt about it. And people that kind of watch from a distance and just look at stats and different box scores, they'll say, oh, man, they're losing a guy that scores 22 points a game. I think this is going to be a rebuilding year for Dave Rose and BYU.
Right.
I don't feel that way at all. I feel like while you lose Tyler, you make up for that with added balance, better post presence for sure, with the addition of Kyle Davis and hopefully Jamal Ates if he can get healthy coming off that foot and ankle injury. And you bring back your team leader. Kyle Collinsworth was the team leader, vocally, on the floor, just because that was his role. And as a senior, with the added balance, I think BYU will be a better basketball team next year than they were this year, even without Tyler Hawes, because of that dynamic. And I'm projecting them to have a single-digit seed in the NCAA tournament because these magazines I'm reading are saying, well, they're going to rebuild. It's going to be tough to replace Tyler Hawes, so BYU may struggle. And it's just like, come on, you know, they're disconnected. They
right.
Don't see the full picture. And so I think that they'll be a single digit seed. When they lose Collinsworth and gain Eric Mika back off a mission, and he'll join Nick Emery, who will be in year two of BYU basketball. Then it gets really interesting because you have Corbin Kafusi, who is then a junior and a senior in Kyle Davis, and it just gets that much more exciting. And so I feel like each year this team will progress a little by little, and when the Lone Peak 3 is all together in 2018 and they've got a couple of years together, this could be a team that could do something special. And when I say special, I mean get back to the Sweet 16, and that's where I'll stop it, because I think some people are thinking, you know, the Final Four, BYU's going to the Final Four. For me, if they get to the Sweet 16 with the Lone Peak 3, that's going to be sweet, and I think that's a couple years away.
Yeah, probably is, but I think there's a chance, Spencer, this season could be special with the combo of KC with those young guys. We'll get you out. Would you like to promo? You guys do basically the only wall-to-wall coverage of BYU Football Media Day, which is coming up. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about how BYU TV, BYU Radio, and BYU Sports Nation will be covering the Media Day?
You bet. Nice of you to team me up like that.
Yeah, I'm good like that.
You gave me a home run pitch, man. Wednesday, June 24th, it'll start at 11 Eastern, 9 Mountain Time with the state of the program. Bronco Mendenhall, Tom Homel will address the big questions. I'm sure many of the things that we discussed today in terms of independence and expansion and the constant, you know, seeking to be in with the big boys, that will last an hour. Following that, at noon Eastern, 10 Mountain, we'll have a two-hour BYU Sports Nation special. We'll be talking to the headliners on the BYU football team, some ESPN figures, and it's going to be great. Following which, there will be a show called Four Decades of Dominance, profiling what BYU football has done over the last 40 years, and the numbers are staggering. I think sometimes we're spoiled as BYU supporters and fans, and we forget how consistently good they have been over the last 40 years, but that's what we come to expect, and BYU fans expect the best, so hopefully they enjoy what the Cougars have put together as we profile the last four decades. And then in between that, there'll be some classic games, BYU-Utah 2006, BYU-Texas 2013, the top 50 plays all time in BYU football history. That'll air a couple of times. And so it's wall-to-wall 24 hours of football on BYU TV to hopefully help bridge the gap during the long drought of the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. We need I think even though it's early, I like the timing so that, you know, we got something to sustain us for a couple more weeks and a couple more months, I should say, until that Nebraska game. Well, Spencer, thanks for coming on the podcast. We'll have you on again. And no matter what Jerem says, I think you could hold Mjolnir. So, you know, he'll have to take that up with me if he's got an issue with it.
I have one last question for you.
Yeah, fire away.
What's your 40-yard dash time?
Not as fast as yours. How's that? let's just say I was telling a coworker this story today about between my sophomore and junior year in high school, I was going out for the football team and I pounded protein shakes and did all this other stuff and lost 3 pounds that summer. But I did my fastest 40 time ever that fall. And I think you still beat it. What I did at 16. Now, if it's double what I did at 16, I'd be probably pretty stoked with it. At this point,
I got some work to do. If you want to get on that training program with me, we'll do it together.
Yeah. I definitely could use it. Well, thanks, Spencer, for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.
CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, what's going on, dude?
How are you?
My brother from the same mother.
Yes, sir.
So, Matt, we talk about a lot of things on this podcast that have nothing to do with BYU sports.
We really do. We run the gamut.
We run the gamut. Yes, thank you, Mr. Vocabulary.
The gauntlet.
The gauntlet? No, I don't know if the gauntlet actually works. We don't really do anything that hard. Isn't like a gauntlet that's hard, right?
I don't know.
Well, you use the word. I mean, I'm just saying.
I just like to throw out cliches.
So, Matt, you and I did a whole preview on baseball. Okay? So let's go back to baseball. Now,
oh boy.
I don't know if you've seen this yet, but Corey Kluber, we're recording this on Wednesday night, 18 strikeouts tonight in 8 innings.
Oh, that's not even fair.
No, it's not. Luckily, the guy that has him in our fantasy league is not playing you or me. He's playing our brother Don.
Listen, you've seen my fantasy
90
team.
Points.
Would it even matter?
No, but 90 points, which won't mean anything to anybody not in our league, but it's a lot.
That is a lot. Listen, weekly scores go somewhere in the 450 to 500 range.
Yeah, yeah.
So 90 points is a big deal.
90 points is a big deal. And that guy had Matt Harvey going for another 40 tonight. So I think that's actually going to outdo your entire week score this week. Oh!
It might beat my whole season.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, getting back to some of the other stuff, Matt. So let's talk teams for a second, okay?
Yeah.
Now, let's go back, get in our DeLorean, go back a couple months, and I'm going to weave a story for you, Matt.
Wow. I will just get out of the way and let the master work.
Okay. Yes, as you should. The Houston Astros would be one of the best teams in baseball going into the middle of May. What would you have done to past Adam if he had made such a prediction?
I would have just laughed.
Yes.
That's crazy town.
That is crazy town.
I might have even slapped you.
Well, that's fair. But the Astros are, right now, if the playoffs started today, would win the division, the Western Division, the West Division, and then would play the winner of... then they would play the winner of... No, they'd play Kansas City. Right, so in the playoffs, Matt, what else has stuck out to you about team performance? Yankees maybe better than you thought.
Ugh, yeah,
it's a terrible
Yankees
thing to say.
Maybe better than I thought. I think even some Yankees fans are disappointed/surprised there.
Disappointed.
Well, I think they were hoping that a certain player would not have a good season.
Here's the thing: if they were hoping that, they're morons. Which. I know, Yankee fan, moron, it's kind of, you know,
kind of
oxymoron.
Synonymous.
So, you know, I can't understand. I get why people don't like him. I get it. But if he's on my team, I want him to be a good, productive player. It's not like they had somebody at DH who was going to fill in and have a monstrous season. So,
right.
But the Yankees are better than we thought.
The Indians are not as good as we thought.
So far, not so much. Though, according to Fangraphs.com, they still have them as a 23% chance of making the playoffs.
That's less than 1-4. I still don't like those odds.
I do not, and I don't think in reality it's that high. Though they are, to be fair, as of today, they are only... 5.5 games outside of a wild card berth, right? So anything can happen in as many months as we have left. On the National League side, Matt, the Mets are the surprise ahead of your Nationals. You notice how I'm artfully not mentioning the Red Sox at all?
Yeah, you just kind of glossed right over that, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to
not going to talk about the bottom of the American League East?
They're technically not at the bottom of the American League East. That's the Orioles.
Listen, both those teams are in the basement.
So Matt, in the National League, it's a little bit of a different story. It's kind of besides the Mets, the teams we thought Cardinals are there. If the playoffs started today, you know, Dodgers are leading the division, and then the Nats, and then the Cubs maybe are earlier than people thought.
Yeah,
but a lot has yet to be written. Pittsburgh's close to a playoff spot. San Francisco, Cincinnati. Heck, even that hastily put together fantasy team known as the Padres are also there. And you've got to be happy at how well the Barbs are doing.
Oh yeah, gotta love it.
Yeah, they're not doing so great, huh? They're not doing so great. So
they're only 5.5 games back.
Yeah, they're only 5.5 games back, and unfortunately, I don't think they're even as good as their record.
Nope.
So that's not good
I think they're
enough
gonna
for
lo
them.
I think they're gonna I think they will be finish below the Marlins. And I don't want to take anything away from the Marlins. They've got a lot of players that are almost ready for the majors.
Yeah. So looking at individual performances, Matt. Jock Peterson of the Dodgers has been ripping it up. He was a high prospect. We'll see if striking out in a third of his at bats is he if he can keep that up. But Steven, and I don't even know how to say his last name, Vogt on the
Voit.
Athletics. Voit, is it
What?
Voit? No, it's not Voit. There's no I. There's no I in team.
So? There is an M and an E.
Yeah, there is an M and an E. So, is he your most surprising performer so far? Steven Vogt or Vogt or whatever his name is.
Maybe, but it's hard to get really excited about anybody on a team that's 13-23, right?
Yeah.
But he's probably a big surprise.
What about Harper is having a great season so far? Slash line of 308, 442, 675 slugging, Matt. And probably so far this year, depending on your metric, I'm using Woba from Fangraphs. He's the best hitter in baseball so far this year.
Right, but I thought we were just talking about surprises.
Well, I'm just saying he hasn't. Yeah. Do we want to pull out his injury history and how much better this season is than the past, or would you just like to talk about how good he is this year?
He's awesome.
He is pretty good.
He is pretty good. He's crushing it right now.
Well,
And it's fun to watch. I
and
mean,
he's
hair flip and all.
here, and I have seen him now twice. He got thrown out of the game tonight. I don't know if you saw that. Thrown out of the game today, and then the guy that replaced him hit a grand slam. But I have watched him now 3 times where he has argued a pitch vehemently with the umpires, and including the one today. And every single time, the pitch track shows that he's right. I mean, his walk rate right now, Matt, is 20%. That is not like Barry Bonds-esque, but right now, it's the second highest in all of the land.
He's seeing the ball very well.
Yes, and not striking out as much as maybe some seasons, though he's still striking out a lot. But it's seeing the ball well and pounding it when they do leave it in the zone.
They say that batting practice is just a joke for him.
Oh yeah, I
It,
have
it's
no
like
doubt
it's
about it.
like it's like home run derby on the Wii.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't even say that because I bet he's better than my home run derby on the Wii.
Well,
I'm just
yeah,
saying.
I was comparing to the average performance
Oh,
on the Wii.
that's nice, you jerk.
I think
All
you're
right.
some probably below the mean there, but.
So should we jump into BYU sports now?
Let's dive in.
Yeah,
We
let's
both
do
see.
that. So Matt, this is kind of the dead zone, right, of the season, right? There's not a whole lot in the off season going on. So things pop up where you go that may not have made news, 6 months ago, but do now. But the other thing that starts popping up that is fun is some of the preseason prognostications are starting to appear and about players and the season. One of those is from Fox Sports, and it's it was today is the 13th. It was 2 days ago. They have a story on Taysom Hill and that he still is a Heisman contender. So Matt, they insider campus insider Rich Sermoniello. I don't know how you say his last name. I'm butchering last
Yeah,
names
we're not
today.
doing real good on last names tonight.
But he calls him the number one Heisman sleeper in college football, Matt. What do you think of his pick of Taysom Hill?
I think it's exciting, and I th there was a lot of people a year ago. I feel like there was some of this floating around as well, leading up to an injury. But I think that everybody, it's not, it I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. It validates.
I don't know what you're trying to say either.
It validates our excitement about Taysom Hill as a player, in my opinion.
Yes.
When people who aren't no real association with the program and are covering on a national level start, you know, putting him on kind of at least the periphery of the Heisman conversation. And I think that it also says, you know, if he can put up the numbers, he may be in New York. You know, I don't know if he gets to take home the hardware, but if he plays a full season, he might get an invite.
I think if he plays a full season with the schedule we've got, and assuming he can still rush, maybe not as much as he did the last two seasons, but I think he gets an invite because the stats will look spectacular, right?
Yeah.
And they'll look spectacular against us, maybe the toughest schedule in BYU history, right?
And people are going to be watching those games.
Yes, I mean, there'll be national games against national opponents. And you have to keep in mind, this is a popularity contest. The Heisman,
that
right?
is really all it is.
So it's not as if there's some complicated formula. It's people voting. And all those type of things. And he's a senior, so he's well-known, so he doesn't have to worry about, you know, a new guy coming in and all that kind of stuff.
Can we just have him sit against Utah State?
I don't think so.
No.
Sorry. So, Matt, in Dennis Dodd on CBSSports.com also prognosticated, but about teams, and he released his post-spring top 25. No surprise, Ohio State is still his favorite for next season. Just missed out of his top 25. He had two teams, BYU and another team I've never heard of based out of Salt Lake City. Matt, does it surprise you to see BYU as a team popping up into preseason discussions of a top 25?
Yes, that definitely surprised me. But sometimes I wonder, when you put out just missed out BYU and Utah, like, is he doing that on purpose? Is he just trolling us all?
Yes.
He knows what he's doing there. He knows exactly what he's doing there. But, Dennis Dodd knows better than that. He knows what's going to happen when he says that. I am surprised to see BYU in that conversation. I think it's pretty early to predict that. I mean, he must be looking at the schedule thinking, that BYU is pretty well prepared to face that. It's interesting when you look at what he's done with some of these other teams and, but I mean, overall, I do like the rankings. So even before I get to the BYU as a just missed out, So I like it even more when I see where he's put BYU.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this in the past. I think they have a potential, even with a few losses, because of who the losses may be to be a top 25 team this year. I mean, with Hill and Williams, if they're healthy, the offense should be awesome. Experienced mm-hmm. offensive line, deep wide receivers, elite guys in the backfield.
Yeah.
The defense, it'll be a work in progress, but it doesn't have to be that great for us to, you know, it just has to be not bad, right?
Yep.
Matt, if I look at his top four, and I'm not saying this is who he's projecting to be in the playoff, but I guess it kind of is. Let's project our playoff four.
Oh, here we go.
Are you ready to say who your number one is, and I'll say who my number one is?
Yeah, who's going to go first here?
You're going to go first. I already said that.
Oh, okay.
Your number one is
Alabama.
Really?
Yeah.
Uncertainty at quarterback and wide receiver, but you still pick the Crimson Tide. Yeah, it doesn't really, does it?
Really, think about it, though, really. Now, the wide receiver part, I get that. But look at the quarterbacks that Saban has done that with the past few years.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to figure that out.
Yes, yes. He will definitely figure it out. I have no doubt of that. My number one is not Alabama. It just turns my stomach to say these words.
Don't
Ohio
do it.
Ohio State.
Oh, I just died a little bit inside.
I left off the because it's
so
dumb.
Is this just because they have all the quarterbacks?
Yeah, well, they've got three potential All-American quarterbacks. That always bodes well, doesn't it?
That's crazy. Do you know that you see here in Dodd's article, he talks about how at the spring game, there was a skills competition between Braxton Miller, racing and Cardell Jones throwing?
Yes.
That's insane.
You know, yeah, it's they are loaded, but and the thing is, they're not just loaded at quarterback.
Yeah,
Urban Meyer has built a pretty strong strong program, as he typically does. All right, Matt, who do you have at number two?
I'm going to take Ohio State at number two.
I just died a little bit inside too.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what else to do.
I don't know what else you're going to do either. But, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, they're good. They're going to be good. I mean, you never know once the games start going. But my number two, I am going to copy Dennis Dodd and have TCU. I'm a little worried.
You're just kind of following the Dodd script here.
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of what I do. No, I'm a little worried about their schedule, okay? And by that, I don't mean that they might not win the games. I mean, again, the strength of schedule, okay? They do start off with Minnesota on the road.
Minnesota.
But that's not a great game, but it's better than what they had last year. But then it's Stephen F. Austin and SMU before they start their season. And you know, I think they're going to be a great team. They may go undefeated. They're going to need to go undefeated with that schedule, I believe, to be in the top four.
All right.
I think. If they're a one-loss team, I think they put it right back in the hands of that committee. Right?
That's right. I think a Big 12 team probably needs to run the table.
Yes, I think that is a fair thing to say. Number three for you, Matt.
Speaking of Big 12 teams running the table, I'm going to go ahead with my number three, Baylor.
Baylor.
Stop yeah! It.
You just like them because they have a 400-pound tight end.
410 pounds, and yes, yeah. I do think that's pretty cool.
That is,
you don't think
that
that's cool?
Cool? No, it is. It is pretty righteous.
It is pretty righteous, really? Yeah. What are we, are we in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Party on, dude. Party on.
But really though, I think that an undefeated Big 12 team gets in the playoff. And I really like Baylor. I liked Baylor last year. I thought Baylor was better than TCU last year.
What? Stop it. That's ridiculous.
I think I did. I think I said
you,
that.
No, you did say it. I just still think it's ridiculous.
But I like Baylor's chances. I think Baylor has a good year.
Okay. All right, I pick as my number three team, boring old Alabama.
Womp so, womp. I took them as one. So.
Yeah, so you can't really say anything at all. So who's your number four team?
My number four team, Michigan State.
You're going to put two Big Ten teams into the college football playoff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're such a Big Ten homer.
No, but really, look what happened last year. Ridiculous. Look what happened last year. What did Ohio State do when they got to the playoff and nobody gave them a chance?
They steamrolled their way to a national championship.
They absolutely did. And you know what that tells me? That tells me that the Big Ten is an underrated conference. Look at the Big Ten, how they do top to bottom. How do they do in bowl games? They
know.
Do pretty well.
How do they do?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I'm just making it up. But anyway, I know an Ohio State fan at work. He cites this stuff all the time. Anyway, my point is, I think the Big Ten is underrated. And I see Michigan State getting in the mix there. Now, I think when you get into that four spot, things get close, which is why I prefer more of, you know, an eight-team type of format. Because I think when you get to eight teams, now you're really getting in. Now you've really – in that group, I think you've got the best team. When you're looking at four teams, I think you have the potential of leaving somebody out
like they did
last
year.
That may belong. Exactly.
Yeah, I think eight would be great because you take the Power Five champs, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like an automatic bid, and then you have three at large.
Yep.
I like that a lot. But That's not what we're talking about, Matt. We're talking about what will actually happen. By the way, they're still playing these games on New Year's Eve, which is absolutely insane and stupid. And I will keep saying that, even though people tell me to shut up, because it's dumb. And once the ratings are crap this year, they'll, even though people keep telling me, well, it's that way a lot of years between now and whenever 2075 when the contract ends, but they will change it. That is my prediction after the ratings are terrible. My number four, Matt, is USC. I'm
Ooh.
pulling Steve Sarkisian out of my hat here, and I think I like him. I like him. You know, they've got a quarterback returning. I don't think the Pac-12. I think the Pac-12 will be good enough that their schedule will look good, but not good enough to keep them out of a top four spot. So I like them. I like them,
There you
Matt.
go. That's an interesting choice. I could, Yeah, USC. I think USC is going to be a good team.
Yeah. So Matt, last thing, Cougars in the news. Did I even say that we were doing CougarFan.com, Cougars in the news?
You did not.
Well, now I'm saying it, CougarFan.com, Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news! Because I knew I hadn't done that yet.
No, you hadn't done that. Tyler Hawes was snubbed by the NBA Combine.
Hey, what's that all about?
It doesn't matter. He's just not projected high enough, and they don't invite that many people. It's not like the NFL, right?
Yeah, it's really not the same thing. You know, I was talking about this with somebody the other day at work. It's not the other drafts, the other, you know, the whole process in the other leagues is just, it just isn't the same.
No, it is not the same. And basically, I mean, there's two rounds, right? And a lot of second round picks are flyers that may or may never pan out. It's just a different path. So I don't think it's a massive deal. I don't think it teaches us or helps us understand anything that we didn't already know about how NBA scouts view his pro potential.
Right.
All right. So, Matt, moving on from the belated named Cougars in the news, was looking at the Deseret News, the story on the 15 ranking BYU's 15 top quarterbacks. All
Yeah.
right. So, you know, I love this kind of thing,
Oh, this
rankings.
stuff is awesome.
I live for this. Okay. So it's on the Des News. We'll not go through the whole list because that would be boring. Matt, it starts with Brandon Dolman at 15, ends with Ty Detmer at number one. Do you have any issues where with Jay Yeoman's placement of any of the quarterbacks on the list? Or do you think he did a pretty good job?
I think you did a pretty good job. There are some places in here that are obviously arguable that I would do differently if I were, you know, putting this list together. You know, one of those being that and you and I have talked about this before. Everybody wants to say because he won a Heisman that Ty Detmer's number one on this list.
Yes.
I don't. That's a tough sell for me, given what some of these other players did. Specifically one Jim McMahon.
He is definitely two for me. Jim McMahon may be the best college quarterback ever, which I know people think is insane, but go back and look at the record books and actually study. The second part is I don't know if Detmer's two for me. It's close with him, Bosco, and Young. The thing that it all depends on how you ascertain the value. Detmer played 3+ seasons, and almost nobody else on this list came close to the number of downs he played, right?
Right.
So if you're just doing it by volume, Detmer's number one because he played the longest, right? And if you want to do it, well, he won the Heisman, nobody else did, fine. But then you might, the Bosco people might say, well, he didn't win a national championship, and
There you
Bosco
go.
did.
Yep.
And Bosco did not have some of the crushing losses that ended up towards the end of Detmer's career. You know, and the other part is that annoys me is Detmer's best season was not his Heisman season.
Nope.
So, you know, that 89 season was way better, and the totals weren't better, but the season was better. And part of that is not his fault. He had a better team. Offense complete, you know, running backs and all that around him in 89. But anyway, but most of all, I don't have much of a problem with Yeoman's picks here. One of the things, though, I do have a little bit is I think Hall and Beck are a little too low. It's really hard. You know, Virgil Carter played in the 60s, you know, and Scheide played, you know, at the beginning of the BYU run, and then Gifford Nielsen, he has, you know, at six. I have a hard time with Gifford Nielsen's limited playing and with Scheide being in the 60s of putting them ahead of Max Hall. That might be recency bias, but that's
just I feel like sometimes in these things, people err in the other direction.
Yes.
They're like, oh, you know, well, Virgil Carter, this is a historic, you know, this is a, you place a little bit of value on the history of that, right?
Yes. But he did lead the nation in total yards in 66. You know, but you just look at the numbers, and it's so hard to compare, right? He completed 48% of his passes.
Yeah.
And at the time, that was fine. That was absolutely acceptable. It was actually probably above average. You know, and he was a great, he was, you know, probably the second or third best running quarterback BYU's ever had. Depending on if you count Hill yet, which you have to, because he's the best.
He scored 68 touchdowns.
Yeah, yeah. That's a lot of touchdowns.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so, but anyway, Matt, it does settle a little bit about our debate on our little rankings, okay? So if you use Yeoman's deal, now he, of course, didn't go all the way to the worst, which... you know, for those of you that that have no idea what I'm talking about, we had an excellent tweet from, and I'm looking it up right now. Why can't I think of his Twitter handle? Todd, yes, from at Todd, and see what I did there. he said, you know, asked us to rank something between. Why can't I think of his name? You stole his jersey.
So it was stole his jersey?
You told him to take
anybody's jersey.
You told him to take off his jersey.
I wasn't the only person who recommended that Riley Nelson take off his jersey.
That's true. That's
and
true.
For clarification purposes, I think we need to make sure everybody understands what we're saying here.
Yes. Yes. No, we don't. I like to leave it confusing. He said from Riley to Ty, okay? You know, from worst to best. And
I'm not convinced that Riley Nelson was the worst ever.
I'm not either, but it's funnier with him than if you say, I don't know.
So he asked us to rank on scale of excitement, were we Ty Detmer excited or Riley Nelson excited?
For the Avengers movie, that's what it was.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, we started debating that it should be Jim McMahon excited. Todd did tweet back and said, McMahon is a great one, but he said all of his first football memories come from attending that Miami game. So he'll always be his number one, which is fair.
Yeah, see, I have that same issue with Steve Sarkisian in the 96 team.
Steve Sarkisian is not in this discussion. But anyway, that's
wait a minute. Steve Sarkisian's not in the discussion? I'm pretty sure he shows up on this list. Number 11.
Yes, he does show up at number 11. I think that's probably fair. Though I would have had... But the funny part is, the Federic, where you said you were Federic excited for the Avengers. He comes in at 13 out of 15, below John Walsh. Now, are you going to tell me you're still Federic excited for the Avengers?
I'm going to tell you that Federic...
You're at
that
least
Federic
Gary
should
Scheide?
Beat John Walsh.
Okay, fine. So you move him up one. But aren't you at least Gary Scheide excited or Steve Young or
so
Golden
Gift? I was just kind of ballparking my own scale when we had that conversation, right? So
yeah.
I'm probably
you're dumb
somewhere between Virgil Carter and Max Hall excited.
Okay.
How's that?
I can respect that better. The Federic, I felt like you
if I use this scale.
And the fact that you still haven't seen Avengers, you and our guest tonight, Spencer Linton, are like two of the last men on Earth who haven't seen that movie. Get out there and see it.
I'm not an early adopter.
Yeah, Yeah, that's a fair statement. All right, Matt. So we
But
are now.
does Kevin Federighi get a bad rap just because he played in those jerseys?
No, I
If
think
he had
Kevin.
played in a real jersey, would we feel differently about him?
No, I think Kevin Federighi gets a bad rap because he didn't play on a great team.
He on this list, now granted, some of these other guys played at times when those jerseys existed, like Brandon Dolman wasn't a great, but on this list, I guess he and Brandon are the only ones in that with the terrible tan stripe.
Yeah, those were terrible.
That's just
And
awful.
the picture of Federic has him in the bib, which
The
the
bibs were
bib.
redonkulous.
Thanks, Nike, for screwing up like 4 years of BYU football or however
Oh,
long it was.
the Y on those helmets.
It's just, it was terrible. I owned a hat that I've since thrown out that had that Y
That's
on it.
just all wrong.
It's a bad decision. Okay, Matt, we're going to do what we do best, which is draft.
Yes,
And
let's draft something.
because I'm magnanimous, I am going to take the first pick in this draft.
Wow.
Usually, I let you have the first pick, but now I'm being magnanimous towards myself. Is that possible?
I think you just like to say magnanimous.
Yes, I do like to say magnanimous. Better than you putting us through the gauntlet, whatever the heck
What?
you were trying to say there.
Say whatever I want. You're not the boss of me.
Technically, no, but I do edit. So, Matt, I'm going to choose, spoiler alert, Jim McMahon with my first pick in the BYU quarterback draft. Now
Oh,
you get the
man.
next two picks because we always do it snake style. Not Jake the Snake style. Does anybody get that 80s WWF wrestling reference?
Okay.
No, that's Randy the Macho Man Savage.
It's the only WWF impression I can do. All right? I can try and do a Hulk Hogan, but it's
Ooh,
just going to be awful.
yeah!
Ooh, yeah. You're going to feel the
Randy!
pain.
Snap into a Slim Jim. I think, yeah, we just both heard our voices. That's fantastic.
Sorry, I had to turn my microphone off for a second there.
You recovered. Have you recovered there? All right, Matt, so you've got the next two picks. Who you got?
Macho Man Randy Savage. No. With the second pick of this draft, I'm going to select Ty Detmer, quarterback, Brigham Young University.
All right, and with the third pick.
The third pick gets a little bit tougher for me.
Weiner, just make a pick.
Steve Young.
I will take Robbie Bosco with my second pick. And now with my third pick, I am going to take, gosh, this is tough.
Yeah, this is when it gets hard right here.
This is when it gets hard.
It's where the
So
rubber meets the road.
yeah, thanks, cliche man. I'm going to go with Max Hall.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. I just picked Max Hall over Virgil Carter, Gary Scheide, Gifford Nielsen, Mark Wilson. Yeah, I just did that. Max Hall. That's you heard it here first, folks. Who you got as your last QB?
Do you know who I'm going to take?
Gifford Nielsen?
I've already given this one
Steve
away.
Sarkisian,
Yes!
because you
Steve
love,
Sarkisian, absolutely.
I
That's one of
almost,
the best teams in BYU history.
I was
And
about
he
to,
was the field general for it.
I was about to troll you and take Sarkisian just to troll you, but I decided not to do that. So Sarkisian comes in and Jay's list at 11, two spots behind Max Hall, but you would move Sarkisian higher.
I would absolutely move Sarkisian higher. I feel like Max Hall's in about the right spot, but for me, now granted, Sarkisian had some tools around him and some players on that defense. I mean, that was a very, very good football team.
Yes, it was a fantastic football team.
But you look at what they were able to do, posting a 14-1 record, a top five finish, and he's not a Ty Detmer, but he led that offense in a way that not everybody on this list did. There are some great leaders and some great quarterbacks on this list.
Yes.
But his ability to lead that offense, it's almost like having a coach on the field.
Look
And he
at you. You've railed out every single cliche that you can think of. That's great.
they took what the defense gave them. There's just another one that I just wanted to throw out there. But seriously, Steve Sarkisian, I think is extremely underrated among the BYU faithful.
So to be fair, of the quarterbacks we've just talked about here towards the end, I have his in my QB season rankings, which I'll link to. I haven't put in 2014 yet. I have his 1996 as the sixth best QB season ever. So, yeah. And that is behind the only ones ahead of that, Ty Detmer, 89, Jim McMahon, 81, Bosco, 84, Young, 83, and then McMahon in 80. So I have it above the Heisman winning season of Ty Detmer. Four slots. But anyway, the point is, you are correct. He's probably underrated, and that 90. The problem with him for his career is 95 was just mediocre.
Yeah, but you know, at the same time, you look at some of this list, even on this list, some of these guys that are marked higher. You know, a guy like Mark Wilson. I mean, he only had a season, really.
Yeah, and that's the problem with I have with Wilson's placement on the list is I don't think he had enough and injuries and same with Gifford Nielsen. It's not that I don't think they were great quarterbacks. It's just that their resume doesn't speak as well to me as Max Hall and maybe even Steve Sarkisian. If I started doing it, his 95, you know, was okay. It wasn't a bad year. He completed 65% of his passes. You know, and the team was mediocre, but that 96 season was special, not just for the team, but for him as well.
Well, and you also look at a player like a Virgil Carter, right? I mean, so he has a season where he leads the nation in total yards and total touchdowns.
Right.
You know, that's a pretty phenomenal feat, you know, but it was a different time. So it's kind of difficult when you get into trying to compare these seasons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's at some point, especially the farther you go back, it becomes almost impossible to rank these seasons. Well, Matt, that's all we got for today. Anything else you want to share before we sign off?
I want to see throwback uniforms featuring the Virgil Carter helmet. I want the blue helmet with the white stretched Y logo on it. That's all I want to say. So Tom Holm will make that happen.
I am the solid jerseys and white pants.
Yep.
I completely endorse that.
Wouldn't that be a sweet throwback? That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. And they would not require you to wear just the kicker's single bar.
No, you can put a real face mask on it if you want to, or not. Up to you.
Up to you.
It's no judgment on your face mask choice.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, Tom Holmo, which I'm pretty darn sure he listens to this podcast religiously. Take note, Mr. Holmo. All right. Well, this has been a podcast, Matt.
Indeed.
I didn't say it was great. I didn't say it was bad. Just said it's been a podcast. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. As always, check out CougarFan.com to get all the latest BYU sports news. Thanks for downloading, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!
Peace out!